podcast where we interview individuals just like you dealing with their own journey from loss to growth, along with mental health experts, growth guides, all with the purpose of helping you to heal better, improve mind, body, and spirit, and find your new purpose from the loss and the tragedy that you have experienced. Hi, I'm Tom Pacello, the ROI guy, founder and host of this podcast, and I'm a growth evangelist for Growth Through Grief, as well as a fellow widower, having lost my beautiful bride of 19 years, Judy, some 5 years ago, almost to the day. Today, we've got a returning guest. She is by far my favorite guest. Helen, welcome back.
Hi, good to be back.
Helen is a licensed mental health counselor. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's a nationally certified counselor with a private practice in my hometown of Winter Park, Florida. As well, Helen is on the board for us here at Growth Through Grief, and she helps guide our practices on all things concerning the mind and mental health. Helen also, unfortunately, has a personal experience with grief and loss as a widow herself. Her husband passed away when her children were only 4 and 6 years old. Helen, welcome back.
Thank you.
Awesome. And today we're here to talk about a topic that every month I now host a virtual meeting of different widowers. And a common theme that came up there, and also in an in-person meetup that we do here in Winter Park, Helen, the topic of loneliness came up in both of those. And it came up a couple of times in both of these different settings with different widowers bringing it up. And I really wanted to address it because I think it's something that's important. I know I faced it. I know you certainly faced it after the loss of your husband. When I first lost Judy, I remember experiencing it pretty quickly. You know, I remember waking up really, I think that first morning, and all of a sudden I felt a sense of loneliness immediately and a sense of, all right, what do I do now kind of thing. Talk about how common that is to feel that loneliness, even though it may only be like a day or two or three, to feel it right away.
Yeah, it's very common. It's almost as if when you've lost a loved one in that way, like the energy changes in your house, that warmth of a presence and that loving presence is just gone. And it's like being in an emotional vacuum for a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. The person who you were used to being with, who you were used to feeling in your home, is gone. And it has an echoing sense of loneliness to it that's really deeply connected with grief. And you know, there are many kinds of loneliness. Brené Brown talks about three different kinds of loneliness, but the loneliness that comes with grief is really big at first.
Yeah, and I've heard the term attachment bonding, that's kind of what happens mm-hmm. with our spouse, right? We're used to them being there in our lives and we're attached to that. There's a big habits that are formed with that. There's this emotional connection that is totally wired into our brain. What is attachment bonding and how does this loss kind of break that important bond and actually break those neurons or at least disrupt them?
Yeah. Well, attachment bonding is about the attachment style we developed as an infant with our caregivers. There's secure attachment, which means that your caregiver was there and met your emotional and physical needs consistently. And so you grow up to be someone who has healthy self-esteem and you're able to connect with people. You're resilient. You're able to navigate through conflict and those kind of things. As anxious or avoidant attachment, that's the one where you might grow up with. It would be that you didn't have your needs met. It would be inconsistent. I'm just going to look at my notes here because I want to make sure I get them all correct. But it's the one where you, anxious is more the ambivalent, where you feel like you can't get your needs met. You might be, someone might be clingy or not be able to trust that somebody's going to be there, meet their needs. Then there's the avoidant dismissive, and they're more sort of your loners, and that's when a caregiver might have not met the needs and might have been neglectful and So the dismissive and avoidant tend to dismiss other people's feelings, and they're a bit more autonomous. And then we have disorganized attachment, and that comes from trauma. So if you've grown up in a lot of trauma and extreme neglect, you're going to have disorganized attachment. So there's a lot of fear because there was no secure base, and feelings of not deserving love. So we have all these attachment styles which play a part into how we connect in our relationships anyway. And when you lose someone, you may have a reaction that's based on those kind of attachment styles. But also there's the loneliness in connection with grief and loss, which is different, because it's like losing sort of the we and returning to just being an I. So you've been navigating through life with a we in every situation. What are we having for dinner? What are we going to watch on television today? What are we going to do for the holidays? What are we going to, what color are we going to paint the house? What are we going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do on the weekend? Are we mowing the lawn, or are we going to go to the market? You know, everything's done in a we, and now it's simply an I. So you don't have your breakfast buddy, your adventurer outside of the house, your home repair person to do all of that with you. So you're doing everything by yourself, absolutely everything by yourself, and everything by yourself emotionally. When there's a big fractured attachment, like in a loss, what you want is your primary attachment figure, which is your spouse or your partner in the current, to help you navigate through the painful feelings. And yet the paradox is the person who would help you navigate through the difficulties and the painful feelings is the one who's gone. So it's quite profound. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, totally. There are, by the way, assessments that you can take online. I've taken it to do your attachments. So I highly recommend those, and I'll post a link to that in our speaker notes. So folks can look that up, because I do think that those elements of how you attach can manifest themselves as you now look to heal and to grow. Fractured attachment and now going, Helen, from we to me is how I look at it. Me can be really lonely. And what exactly is loneliness? Is there like a definition that you as a mental health professional use to define what is loneliness?
I looked it up, right? Because I was thinking about what exactly is loneliness after I've just muddled my way through that attachment stuff there.
I love it.
But it talks about social isolation. But Brené Brown actually talks about that there are three types of loneliness. There's the emotional, relational, and collective. And I really like this, because when you lose a spouse, you're losing all three. You're losing the emotional attachment, the person that you can talk about your feelings with if you're in that kind of relationship. Not everybody has that kind of relationship, right? But there will at least be some sharing on an emotional level there. And they're your primary relationship. And if you have children, you're bonded in a way as parents in that way too. And then collectively as a family. So there's a, sort of a collective loneliness in that you're no longer a family in maybe that more traditional sense, or a couple in the sense of being a coupleship. And it changes completely your social standing and status. And that's a big change in our culture. Coupleship is viewed one way. Being single is actually viewed sometimes in a marginalizing way, as if being single is not the right way to be, as if to be sort of a successful person in this culture, you have to be in a couple. It's sort of set up really in that way. It's not true, of course. It has no bearing on success at all. But, you know, people are seen differently if they're single or if they're in a coupleship, which is unfortunate. So when that rapid dissolution of a coupleship is a rapid change of a social position, you're now being seen differently. And the groups that you used to be in, you won't feel connected in the same way. Because you're not a couple anymore. You're a me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that can feel lonely because there's no ability to identify in the same way with your social group.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in the dictionary, it talks about social connection. Loneliness is an absence of social connection. But again, we know that you can be lonely within a group. You can be lonely within a family. You can be lonely within a relationship or a marriage because you don't have maybe the emotional connection that's going on there. But that's a different kind of loneliness when your person is gone.
Yeah, I think Brené Brown's, you know, multidimensional aspect to this is a lot better than just the social aspects, because Helen, it brought up a great point, celebrating our kids' graduation and with family friends, dear family friends. Absolutely, we're there through all of the messiness of the disease and after that, and provided support to me, provided support to the family. So wouldn't trade these friends for anything. But the friends were there for us for big family trips that we took together up to Michigan, and we were always with them as a couple and as a family. And so when I go to hang out with this group, you know, there's one friend couple, there's another friend couple, and then there's me sitting at the table. And you talk about being in a social situation and feeling lonely. You know, Judy used to be the star at these. She had all the fun stories of the kids growing up and would share it with the women at the table. And I feel this amazing loneliness, not from them causing it, my friends, but from me inside, that, oh, well, my partner's not here and I'm here alone and you're there as couples. And so you start to feel awkward in some of those friend groups. And many of us as men don't have those individual guy friends. Most of, as we raised our kids and everything else, it became couple friends. And so I found myself not only in situations like that where the old friend groups, I kind of feel lonely, but then I look to the side and say, okay, well, what about my single or, you know, widowed or divorced friends, guys, and don't really have very many of those. And I think that's not an uncommon situation for many widowers.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. And in fact, when you're out with your couple friends, if anything, it shines a light on the absence of Judy and makes the loneliness even bigger. Yet here you are with people, because it makes the loss more felt at that moment in time. It's really tough.
Yeah. And Helen, how did it manifest itself for you? Did you have any similar experiences?
Yeah. You know, I missed so much the warmth of David's presence and having someone to joke with. You know, in our marriage, we had all these stupid, funny things we do, you know, impressions we do with each other, just those little things that are the love maps of, of your partner that you're with, the silly dances we do, all those kind
the
of
things. The bear dance, right?
Yeah, the bear dance, exactly. And all these little intimate things that we had years of connection and doing, and to have an absence of that was just like, it was like living in an echo chamber. And so what I did was I just turned to my kids a lot and I focused on my kids, which is not always the healthiest thing to do. And, you know, because that can turn you into a helicopter parent. If you're taking your loneliness and now making it all about your children, then there's a chance that you're going to be over-involved in your children. I think for a period of time, I was over-involved in their feelings and what they were going through. And I got some help with that. So I was able to back off a bit with that, which was good. But when you have young children in particular, it's not easy to leave them after that kind of loss and go out and socialize. And I certainly wasn't going to bring someone home to the house. I was very reluctant to do that because of safety and just, so I spent a lot of time being single. Is what I did. I spent a lot of time being single. I think there are particular times and events where the loneliness is more than it is at other times. It's holidays, it's family get-together times, it's special occasions, it's donuts with dads, muffins with moms at school, it's every Mother's Day, every Father's Day, every birthday. It's those times that really can rocket up the loneliness. And we need to acknowledge that those times are difficult for a lot of people anyway, even if you're not feeling lonely through loss in general. And then I have a particular heart for people who have lost family members and spouses through COVID, because it has accentuated loneliness to a level that is just way beyond, so excruciatingly painful, because people weren't able to be out and around others at all and were restricted. It's just an exceedingly difficult time, because I know you talked with Chris about he lost his wife during that time, right?
Absolutely. So difficult. And had to go on lockdown. Yeah. And so many widowers that listen in, they had to have, they had that experience where it was a double loss. They lost their spouse, some of them to COVID, and then found themselves isolated, you know, locked up without any physical connection, emotional connection, all of that.
Yeah. And loneliness leads to depression. It does. Mm-hmm. So it's, we are designed as human beings to need human contact. And if, even if you're an introvert and it's one person every so often versus an extrovert, which is a little more, I'm more extroverted, I think you are too, Tom, then, you know, is we're designed that way. One thing I did want to point out with that loneliness, we talked about attachment and attachment styles. And so the fractured attachment after losing a spouse, what you can see is somebody who has maybe an anxious attachment, they may go out and find a relationship and get very involved in that relationship as a way to regain that attachment. And that doesn't always work out, in a way to negate the loneliness. And then with our avoidant crowd, there, I'm a little more, I can be a bit like that. I was like, I don't need a relationship. I'm fine by myself. I'm on Helen Island over here. I'm autonomous, and I am, you know, I'm independent, but that's basically because I'm scared shitless to get into a relationship, right? Because I don't want to lose it again. You know, I finally attached to someone and now I'm not going to go through that and lose that again, kind of point of view. So we can see around loneliness, the attachment styles playing out pretty significantly.
Yeah. And Helen, that's where I think understanding it and doing some homework on it is good. So take the test to understand your attachment style. And sure enough, and I don't think this is a surprise to you from some of our personal conversations, I am an anxious attachment style. And so sure enough, what did I do when I was lonely? Sought out a relationship pretty darn quick, right? Too quick. And I think there's a lot of widowers that do fall into that mindset. You know, they feel helpless, they feel lonely right away, and they want that nurturing, they want that attachment. And unfortunately, they get into relationships, and so many are moving in within 8-9 months, married within the first year. And unfortunately, the failure rates for those relationships are extremely high. You're not ready. The person who you're with may not be ready for who you are at that point. And then ultimately, the healed person on the other side. And so definitely not, definitely understanding that, and definitely understanding kind of that you're attaching out of anxiousness and not out of a secure attachment could be really helpful.
I think too, our homes have changed so much when you've had a loss that it can be very difficult to even be at home because it is 100% a reminder of who's not there. And I know people who've had losses who couldn't even bear to be at home or couldn't sleep in their own bed anymore and had to sleep on the couch or just couldn't even go and sit in a certain part of the house or outside because it's just so incredibly painful and so incredibly lonely for them. And, you know, time is helpful, but getting a group and a connection with a group like the group of men that you have is so important. Having those similar experiences to talk about, people who've been through it and who understand, maybe not completely the same way that you're experiencing it, but can understand, that helps alleviate the loneliness in the experience. There's loneliness around not having the person anymore, and then there's the emotional loneliness in the experience of a loss that is so profound. So super important to get connected.
Yeah. And I do think what you're saying is, you know, you've got to take some, first of all, I think gaining an understanding of your attachment style, definitely good. Starting to categorize some of your loneliness and then going and taking some steps to maybe overcome some of that loneliness is important. Yes. So let's talk about that, because I know that many of the folks on the phone and, you know, who are listening to us, they don't want to be in this lonely state forever. They don't want to go out and have an unhealthy relationship. They want to do this the right way. Helen, yeah. What is the right way? And I know everyone is so different, but let's mm-hmm. talk about maybe some techniques to overcome the loneliness. One of them you mentioned is peer support, right?
Yeah.
Getting together with a widow or brother or a widow sister and talking it out. Talk about that first.
Yeah. And so that's great, because these are the people, these are the tribe, right? Mm-hmm. That really get what loss and loneliness is like and it's about. And they're the ones that you know that you can talk about how you're feeling over and over and over again. And you don't have to worry about whether you're becoming annoying or a downer. Because so often I hear, I just don't want to talk to my friends about it anymore. I'm sure they're sick of hearing it. I don't want to be a downer in the party. But most of the time, we're not downers for other people. People have a lot of empathy and their wells run really deep. But we do know with each other, we can talk about as much as we want, cry about it as much as we want, get angry about it as much as we want. And we'll have an attentive ear mm-hmm. and an understanding ear. So that's really important. And then there's, you know, trying things that you may have wanted to try, getting that courage to go and take a pottery class or go axe throwing or find a meetup group that's going to go hiking and go to that meetup group. That takes a lot of courage, and not everybody is able to do that, especially those who may have social anxiety, may have a difficult time. They're more introverted and don't have the same confidence in socially connecting. So that can be difficult. So, you know, get into an online D&D group or find a way to connect that works for you. And it can be online at first. That's okay. We do need in-person connection. That's going to be very important. But you can take it slowly. You can kind of put a toe in the water out there and go to a meetup, or go to church, go to a singles event, go to some kind of group, any kind of social activity, go to something at the library that they have going on. And hang out and talk.
Yeah, an important thing for the introverts, and talk about this a little bit, because I'm a little bit more, I can be introverted, but, you know, extroverted all the same. Mm-hmm. So I don't empathize completely mm-hmm. and understand completely. Maybe just getting out to a coffee shop, even if you're just talking to the barista and then just sitting at the table and doing your work or something else, go out to the gym, even if you got earbuds in and you're on the elliptical. It's kind of just getting out, now that we can, into those social environments. You don't have to necessarily interact, but I did find that that broke some of my loneliness. Like, there were days where I didn't feel like talking to anyone. I didn't want to. I wanted to kind of be inside my own head and work some things out for myself. But I felt still that getting out to the coffee shop and getting out to the gym and getting out and socializing, not interacting, but still getting out in social situations, was really helpful. Is that true? Is that a good recommendation?
That's a great recommendation. And it is so true, because then you don't feel alone. Which helps with the loneliness. You know, sometimes it's okay to be alone. I like to be alone. There are times when I crave being alone, but not at first. That wasn't how I felt. So being around people when you have an empty house can be really important. So it's a great strategy, taking work to the coffee shop, reading a book at the coffee shop. I would go out to eat with my book. You know, if the kids were busy or doing something else, and, you know, I go and take my book and I go out to eat, because I just wanted to be around people, because it gave me a sense of connection, but I wasn't necessarily talking to someone. So I love that. That's a great strategy.
Yeah. Table for one, though, can sometimes feel lonely, right? So a strategy that I use with that is sit at the bar. Many clubs have a bar, many restaurants, the bar is the fun place to be anyway, and you still don't have to interact, but the bartender's there and they'll be attentive to you and it is a social environment. And then if you do like to interact, what better place with people coming and going a little bit?
Yeah, it's a great suggestion. I'm not a sit at the bar kind of person. So I always, as long as I have something else to do, I was okay. So a book is the way to go for me in that.
And then you spoke about the clubs, which I absolutely love, you know, finding a group of people that have a common interest and going to do that. Here in town, there's like a local paddleboard group that I went out to a couple of times to meet people. And then for me, one of the big things that I continue to this day, and I love this, in fact, I'm probably going to have some of the people on, is I go to Cycle Bar and do a spinning group exercise class. And they're like a second family to me. And they were open pretty quick after COVID and were slow to shut down in the beginning. And so I miss that family when it was shut down. And now that it's back, I mean, they're friends that I've had for now a long time. And we only see each other at Cycle, but I feel like they're part of my family. Yoga works the same way. The same people I see at the Y working out every morning. And you start to become friendly with those people. It doesn't have long interactions, but it's social.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. You've got your pods, right?
Yeah.
Your pods, the Cycle pod, the yoga pod, the coffee shop pod. It's wonderful. It's great. So putting yourself in proximity helps with loneliness and gives you the opportunity to create new and more friendships. I was very, very blessed because my neighborhood, fantastic community. So I had a lot of friends and I had a lot of friends that leaned in and I got invited to a lot of social events, a lot of dinners, a lot of game nights, a lot of those kind of things, which was really great. But it kind of went away after 6 months. And I think can find that after 6 months, when it's sort of calming down a little bit, as in I call it the business of death, of having to get through everything and get the logistics. And now you've turned this ship into, now you're getting into your routine by yourself. And then a lot of that support drifts away. And now you're really left to deal with being alone. Because everybody has lives, everybody's getting on with everything. And that can feel even more lonely than the initial loneliness of that initial loss. And that's when it's really important to take some action and really start saying yes, even though you want to stay no. And we have to talk a little bit about creating loneliness for ourselves by self-isolating. Those messages, you know, self-esteem can take a hit with this kind of loss, you know, feeling not wanted, feeling left out of, feeling on the outside of the groups, not belonging anymore, being the different one, dealing with the pity eyes, you know, wanting to be just a person versus the one whose wife died or whose husband died, just, you know, and so they can lead people to self-isolate and feel lonely as a result because they don't want to go out there and they don't want to maybe be asked how they're doing and then have tears come up and be flooded with tears, which, you know, happens. It really does happen. So they start to avoid being around people as a way to avoid feelings. And that can really enhance that loneliness.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And really just trying to get the courage up and stop the negative thoughts around that, your automatic negative thoughts that come to mind when it comes to socialization and feeling bad for yourself. You know, just try to suck it up and get out there. Totally agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if anybody comes to CFS, either you or I or Cam or Manaz or anybody are going to be talking to them, right? Yeah. So all the introverts need to go to CFS. Which is all over the top in Winter Park, because somebody there is going to talk to you.
And
it's
so
such a great community coffee shop.
I completely agree with that. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have experienced loss and experienced different things that all of a sudden you'll find out, you know, wow, I didn't realize, you know, Russ, that you lost both your parents together. And, you know, or Or you, Helen, I didn't know in the beginning, in fact, after several conversations, that you were a widow. And so all of a sudden, you have these empathetic conversations with folks that you wouldn't normally meet. And I know those with social anxiety, it can be really, really tough to get out and get out there. Talk a little bit. One of the challenges that came up in one of the meetings that a gentleman was having was, you know, he almost, how do I say this, inflicts loneliness on himself. And I know I'm not going to word this right. Because he doesn't feel like he should be out having fun or experiencing life, because why should he? His wife doesn't have that opportunity anymore. And you know, why should he go on and he have the fun and he go out and be socializing or doing joining a club or doing this or doing some of the things that they would have normally done together? Talk about that loop a little bit that sometimes we get ourselves into, because this isn't uncommon.
No, it's not. You're talking about survivor's guilt is the term for it. So that I shouldn't be here because they're not here. And it is a cognitive dissonance, right? Because that's not true. Sometimes asking someone, would your wife want that for you? Can be helpful. Or what would she say? Well, she'd want me to go down to the coffee shop and have a good time. She'd want me to grab a buddy and go and play golf. So knowing that that's what she would want for you, can you give yourself a little bit of what she might want for you? Can you give that to yourself? And that can help someone shift a little. I don't know how much time has gone with that loss, but sometimes it takes some time for someone to start choosing to live again, because there is that piece that when the spouse dies, it feels like part of us has died, and many people have felt like they've wanted to die too, because it's so painful and they can't contemplate living life without this person. And there are some stages in this, because, you know, they can't contemplate living life without this person, and then okay, so here I am. I have to stay because I'm not going to choose to leave it. But I can't contemplate living life and experiencing any kind of happiness or joy without that person. Mm-hmm. That just feels wrong. It seems wrong. It's not okay. And sometimes this is particularly in connection with people who don't have children in the home or don't have children at all, because it takes away sort of the main person and there's nobody left. And so there can be a correlation there. And so then there can be a shift into, okay, well, maybe I can take my dog for a walk, or I'm going to get together with my cousin. But it really can take a long time for someone to feel like, number one, they have the capacity to feel joy, and they can feel joy without feeling guilty that this person's not here to feel it with them.
So one of the things, Helen, that I purposely went and did, and it took me quite a while to do this, was I really realized that, look, the couple friends were still important in my life and I'm still connected to them, but I still did get those feelings of loneliness, and it wasn't quite as deep as I needed. And so one of the things that I did was I created some guy groups. And I actually went and sought that out. And I think as men, we've kind of lost those guy groups in a lot of ways. You've seen our group, the guys group, where we go out and just do cars and chai on the weekends as one of the groups. This is in addition to the widowers group. And it kind of gives me that guy to guy connection that I think we so desperately need nowadays. We don't have, statistics show women have that friend that they confide in for health issues, for sadness, for financial issues, for whatever the challenges might be. They usually, percentage-wise, 70, 80, 90% will indicate they have one or two friends that they can confide in with all of these different elements in their life. And as guys, I can tell you that up until probably a year ago, I had very few that I could confide in any of those areas. Talk about the importance of maybe getting out there and doing that, to finding those guys that you can hang out with and have that guy time outside of the couple time that you used to have, those old couple friends.
Yeah. So I think guy time comes in a couple of different forms. You've got your clean cars and dirty chai group, right? Which is one kind of guy time. And then you've got your widows group, mm-hmm. widowers group. And, you know, men are acculturated into seeing feelings or emotions as womanly and therefore, you know, not good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men were raised to not feel like they were associated with women because women, you know, through sexism and misogyny are considered sort of not the ideal.
Mm-hmm. Weaker, maybe. Yeah.
Right. Weaker. Yeah. And any kinds of emotions or feelings outside of anger are considered vulnerable and feminine.
Mm-hmm.
So what I love about what you're doing with your group is you are normalizing the truth of the situation, which is all feelings are normal. Mm-hmm. Let's get some support in and have some conversations about what it's really like, and to do it without shaming or putting these narrow gender-based cultural standards onto people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're pioneering that, which I love that you're doing that. It's so important. And we are seeing a shift really actually, you know, collectively and culturally in more of a swing towards men being able to just be fully human instead of having to be this locked into this little tiny box of non-emotional, don't cry, don't do this, don't do that, make money, that's your job, that's your role, you're not a man, you're not a real man unless you're this way.
Mm-hmm.
Women have their own box too, but I'm so glad that you're pioneering breaking out of that and being able to be authentic and congruent, because there's nothing worse in feeding loneliness, going to a group of people and acting like everything's okay when it isn't, and then going home and now you not only have your loneliness that you left with, but this like dissatisfaction around the experience.
Yeah.
And the feeling like you just having to pretend to be Mr. Fucking Sunshine or Miss
Fucking Sunshine. You've got this mask on, right? And so John Thurman and I had that session on masks for just that reason, because a lot of times, men, we've got to put those masks on. The other thing
that's exhausting.
It's exhausting. Yeah. So many men, when you ask them, they'll admit, I'm tired. And this was me for a while through the illness and through everything else. And it wasn't Judy's fault that I was tired. And it wasn't even the illness's fault. It was the freaking masks I had to have on to be stoic, to be non-emotional, you know, and that was my fault. I was not letting myself be vulnerable. And so I wasn't true to myself. And that inauthenticity, that dissonance, that incongruity that you mentioned was why I was exhausted all the time. Sure, there were the sleepless nights and the care and everything else, but it was really around the incongruence between who I was inside and then what I was portraying outside.
Yeah.
One of the other things too with the male groups is it's not about, you know, the toxic masculinity and being like over the top masculine. Like, we're a car group, but when we get together, we're talking about our emotions a lot of times. We're talking about our relationships and we're trying to have these frank discussions that many of us, it's been a long time since we've had those with other guys. And now that we don't have our spouse. Yeah. Now that I know for me, I didn't have Judy to go back to talk to anymore. It was really important for me to replace that, not with another woman in my life who I could still have discussions with, but with guy friends that I could kind of build that up and those relationships so that it was these healthy attachments across all these different dimensions. And I hope everyone's hearing that, you know, this, it didn't occur overnight, all of these things. You know, I'm 5 years in, you know, it's a process. I didn't really work on these male connections until maybe a year ago, if that. But that it was also purposeful, and that I looked for these gaps in my life and said, if in order to grow, I need to have not just one dimension of relationships and get involved with a woman so deeply that she was the only one in the center of my life. I needed to have these multiple dimensions of relationships in my life. And that's actually created healthier relationships when and if I am in a relationship with a woman.
Yeah, because you have this good diversity in your connections. I think, you know, one of the things is leaning into the social structures that we have in place, which for me were around my kids, you know, school, PTA, those kind of things. So if there's something in your life that supports that, leaning into it, whether it's work and social events in connection with work, or for you, I think church was one you got back to, right? And then your girls were a bit older, but you still would have been very present in what was going on with them. So those are already there. Try not to avoid it. Just lean into getting those connections as you can. What I love about the Cars and Chai group, Tom, is I love the diversity in emotions in there. Like, you have a group of men who, you know, someone may be brand new at expressing emotions in there, and it might be a new kind of experience for them to come and chat with a group of guys and talk about feelings. And then you have you and a couple of others who are very much emotionally in tune and now comfortable with expressing their feelings, and you're role modeling and creating this safe space for other men to express their feelings too, which is great.
Yeah. If you want other guys to share, I found the best way to do that, and I learned this from my friend Chris, who I've also interviewed. He did it. He shared some things that, gosh, I wouldn't share unless I knew someone, you know, for years. He was sharing it openly, and he taught me just how powerful that could be, because after he shared, I wasn't afraid to share anymore. And so a lot of times I think we're afraid to share because we don't want to appear weak, but it's like people are wanting these kind of deep connections. And I found that every time I do openly share, it surprises me just what I get back. And I get back so much more from a sharing perspective and such openness. And it takes the relationship to that next level. So be vulnerable. I know it's tough. Put yourself out there. And I think you'd be surprised, as long as it's in that safe environment, you know, to that, how much other people will open up with you and how deeper those connections can get pretty quickly. Because none of these groups are that old, but I really feel like we're old, dear friends, even though we haven't, you know, we're just getting to know each other in a lot of ways. Pets, let's lighten it up a little bit, Helen. Yes, loneliness, one of the best ways to cure that are pets. You've met my Ruby. I take her up to clean cars and dirty chai sometimes. I don't know where I'd be without her. When the girls left to go away to college, the house was really lonely, but Ruby was always there to encourage me to take a walk and get the heck out of the house. Pets, can they help?
Very much so. Really great. They can really give somebody a reason to get up in the morning. And, you know, getting those snuggles, having the routine of needing to care for someone outside of yourself can help motivate you to take care of yourself. If it's a dog, getting out in a walk, going to the dog park, meeting people. I go to the dog park every Sunday morning. There's this whole group of people that get together in the small dog park at Lake Baldwin.
Yeah.
I know all these people now, these really cool people, all these different people I wouldn't normally have met. I'm now like Facebook friends. We've got our own Facebook group for the small dogs. And yeah, it's really cool. So that's a great connector right there. A connector for one's heart and for feeling loved. A connector for responsibility, and a connector to connect with other people as well. So super important.
Excellent. And then you mentioned Facebook groups and some other groups. I mean, if you've got social anxiety and you're worried about meeting people in person, do those help having online groups? Yeah.
Yes, very much so. And that's a really good place to start, especially if someone's not ready to go on out and connect and do it individually. Really great.
Awesome. Helen, what's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave our widowers, our growth warriors with today about loneliness?
Yeah, I think it's the cure to loneliness lies in taking action to be around others and being willing to override the, I don't have it in me. You want to feed the interaction, don't feed the loneliness.
Yeah. And that can be a reinforcing loop. So it does take effort to break it. We've all been there. I know, Helen, you've been there. I've been there. There were days where it's like, I just don't want to face the world. You know, I just don't, I don't want to go outside. I don't want to go to the coffee shop. I don't want to go to the gym and see anybody. I just want to be here and And there are going to be days like that. And sometimes that'll happen. But if every day is like that, the loneliness will just keep building and building. And then, as you said, it leads to that clinical depression.
Yeah.
We don't want to see any of our widowers fall into that. So if you're in that mode, the way to break it is you just, you know, get out there, take a couple of steps. Could be with social online groups in the beginning. Could be get out to the coffee shop, get out to what maybe low interaction social events, and then
passive interaction. Passive interaction. Shut with your book, your computer, you're around people, even if you don't want to talk with them.
Yeah, exactly. And then certainly if you're an extrovert and, you know, get out there to join the groups, do the hobbies, do those things that you've wanted to do. And I think a big thing for me was diligently, particularly these last 12 months and starting at the beginning of last year, but certainly this whole year, it was I flat out set a goal, get outside of my comfort zone in as many things as possible. Mm-hmm. So for me, doing yoga, doing Pilates, joining a rock band, which is another group of guys that I hang out with now. You know, it's the things where it was like, you know, I probably wouldn't have done those things a couple of years ago. And you can set up these goals to kind of get out there and break the loneliness. And it is in your control to do that. There are plenty of people who are dying for social interaction with you, you know, really wanting that. And they're looking for connections. And you've got so much to offer because of your life experiences. That's the other thing I think that I realized through this is like my brokenness is now one of my biggest gifts, you know, that it's kintsugi gold joined. It is my beauty, not my, you know, my ugliness. And I used to hold it as like, wow, I'm broken. You know, when I hang out with these couple groups, I'm the broken one in the group. I'm less than. And that's not the case. I'm actually in a lot of ways now because I can share, because I have these emotions. I actually feel like I've got more to give, not less. Helen, thank you so much. This has been great. And I know it's going to be really helpful for all of the widowers out there. Thank you again.
You're welcome, Tom.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Grow Through Grief podcast. If you liked this session with Helen and I, please hit the like button, subscribe so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes. We're going to have Helen back for several more topics that we've got lined up. And I'm so thankful for all her contributions and all her help. Stay up to date on the latest episodes by subscribing. And until next time, my growth warriors, keep growing.